For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Governor Fallon kicks off the 2017 legislative session with her seventh and next to the last State of the State address. It took about 30 minutes to lay out her hopes for the next 4 months. Neva, how do you think she did?
Well, I think we heard a State of the State that basically was a repeat of previous State of the States in large measure. I mean, same backdrop. Here we have a budget shortfall, this time $900 million as opposed to last year's $1.3 billion. But nevertheless, I think the governor made it clear that the focus needs to be on the budget. The focus needs to be on trying to correct the path that we're on. There was some good news, you know, this week that certainly kind of complements that when we heard from the state treasurer that finally we broke a 20-month slide with the gross state revenue. So we're seeing some indicators that things are moving the right direction. I think what she laid out were a lot of proposals that have been talked about for a long time. I think the question is, as we said, I think last year, where will the governor put her political capital? I mean, last year she tried the cigarette tax. She's laid it out again. Will she double down on that, or will she try to negotiate some of the other points that she had in her State of the State? So I think this is the launching point. I think we have a lot of different ideas out there, and certainly no consensus, even among the Republicans, both in the House and the Senate. So I think, I mean, there are a lot of different components of this that we can talk about specifically, but the backdrop is, I think we heard a predictable State of the State.
Ryan.
Yeah, and I think that Neva's exactly right. We saw a lot of the same themes that we've seen in years past, you know, corrections, healthcare, infrastructure, education, and how those services are struggling to meet the needs that the people of Oklahoma expect of them. And when we look at how she's going to pay for that, she's proposed some new revenues, you know, cigarette tax being one of them, expanding the sales tax to cover things like services, but also eliminating the grocery tax and eliminating the corporate income tax. You know, those are two things that are going to take revenue off the table as well. So a lot of this is some unknowns, you know, whether or not, you know, Democrats are going to go along in the Senate and the House, and in particular in the Senate now, or in the House now, where the Republicans have a supermajority essentially, but they've lost a couple of members due to resignations, and they're probably not going to see those numbers come back, at least this session, even if they do see them after the elections. So can they get Republicans on board with this? Can they bring some Democrats on board with this? And where do ultimately the new revenues that would make up for the elimination of the corporation tax and the grocery tax, where do those come from? And I know that there's a strong argument against the corporation tax because, you know, it's between, you know, 2 to 5% of the budget. Some years it's been upwards of 8% of the budget, but it's volatile. It's difficult to plan for. But, you know, even taking it off the table because it's volatile, I would say that if we're not sure where the rest of these revenues are coming from, at the very least, the corporate tax needs to stay on the books.
And here's what we have. We have volatile versus regressive. We have this pendulum that swings back and forth. I mean, do we add more? Do we take away, you know, more here? And that's the real crux of the matter, is that there needs to be, in my view, this grand bargain that is struck where you come up with a deal that no one particularly loves, but everyone sees that we really move the ball forward in terms of addressing some of these issues. Like you say, Ryan, correction, some of these big budget issues. Do we go from 4 day a week to 5 day a week on school days? I mean, do we look at the 164 specific areas where services would be taxed, the fees? And I think what the lawmakers have to really struggle with is, what will their constituents back home be agreeable to? I mean, in the big picture, is this now the time when they can seize the moment and do some big things that normally there wouldn't be the appetite to do? And this is the year to do it. Don't wait till next year when you're back looking at whether you're up for reelection or looking at the political landscape with a governor's race and all the secondary races in the mix. So I think this is the time, and my sense is that even among these new lawmakers, these fresh faces out there, that they come to the table really recognizing that the budget is at the forefront of what needs to be discussed. Not a lot of these other extraneous wild bills that get out there. And frankly, most of those should be dispatched quickly, and they need to keep their focus on the budget, which is the real issue at hand.
Because of State Question 640, it's a lot easier to cut out taxes, as we've learned over the past decade and a half, than it is to put new taxes back on the books. So is there any chance you think of any new revenue this year?
You know, and I think that there's some argument if you're eliminating exemptions, you know, so if you're expanding the sales tax base and you're by including services in the sales tax that's collected by state and local governments, is that an increase in taxes that would trigger the state question 640 requirements of having three quarters in both chambers? Now, there's arguments on both sides of that. I think we've seen from everybody from the Democratic minority leader, Scott Inman, saying that it's not, to Republican leaders in both chambers saying that it's not. Now, ultimately, it won't be up to them to decide whether or not it is or is not a tax increase. It would be up to a court, and a private citizen could bring a lawsuit after a budget is passed.
So,
Jerry Fent, and I think that lawmakers would be prudent to factor that in, to think, all right, if we're going to put together this budget that is going to have some increases, whether that's the elimination of exemptions or whatever it is, the very best that we could do would be to have, like Neva says, this grand bargain. Now, if we're going to have a grand bargain, we're going to get everybody to the table and have these huge numbers in both chambers to pass these, I think we have to put some other things back on the table. You know, we didn't hear anything about income tax rates. We didn't hear anything about capital gains rates in the state of Oklahoma. We didn't talk about, really, for the last several years, we've talked in state of the states and in legislative sessions about the hundreds of millions of dollars that we give away in exemptions and loopholes in the tax code, and, you know, trying to rein those in. Are they really working for Oklahoma? Are we getting a return on our investment? We didn't hear a lot of that. So if we're going to have this grand bargain, I think all of that needs to be on the table so that we can really look at where the revenue could come from in the state's future.
Neva, do you think there's the chance of...
Well, I don't know. And here's the other thing. I mean, one of the things that the governor laid out was the $50 million bond related to public safety corrections, where that her suggestion was to fund new wings at a men's and women's prison that would be for basically substance abuse rehab treatment type facility, something that we all know, I mean, in the scheme of things, is part of, again, these bigger issues that have to be addressed. And I think when we have someone like the corrections director coming to the legislature back in the summer saying that we're beyond the tipping point and saying that when you've got facilities that are, you know, decades and decades old, that we're busting at the seams, that we have this incarceration problem that the public has already said it's time to fix, and now we have lawmakers are going to have to go back and forth on this give and take of, you know, did they really mean that? Did they really know what they were voting on? Well, that's a pretty big insult to voters that they didn't know what they were voting on. And I find that somewhat despicable that any lawmaker is going to, you know, launch that as their idea of, you know, how they want to engage in this dialogue. So, you know, let's get serious. Let's get to the table and let's see what happens. But, you know, I do think this is an opportunity, as we've talked about, you know, for years now with Governor Fallon, that as she's coming to the close of her political career as governor in Oklahoma, she does have an opportunity with a majority in the legislature to really forge some big ideas. And, you know, I'm still optimistic. I see in the new leadership in the House and the Senate two men who seem, you know, to be strong leaders who are engaged in the process and I think can hopefully be the forces to help see some things really happen before the end of May.
You know, the $50 million bond issue is interesting. I think corrections needs all the money that we can give them, especially since they are on the receiving end of a broken criminal justice system. The problem, though, is that when we're thinking about building these substance abuse and mental health treatment wings on prisons, you know, really, who is best prepared and equipped to deliver mental health and substance abuse services in the state of Oklahoma? Is it the Department of Corrections? I don't think so. I think that if we're going to pass this bond issue, I'd rather see a bond issue go out and let's put $50 million in the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services so we can help folks on the front end. Because if we're just building these wings onto prison, then we're presuming that we're just still operating within this criminal justice system that criminalizes addiction and mistakes recreational responsible adult use of drugs as addiction by everyone. You know, we have to get beyond this idea that just because you use a drug that you're abusing a drug. And we do a real disservice to people that have true substance abuse problems whenever we just categorize everybody who uses as somebody who's in need of substance abuse treatment.
And, you know, in public safety, I mean, we're not only talking corrections, but the other point that the governor made in her speech was the fact that 26% of troopers are actually eligible for retirement, state troopers. Mm-hmm. And when you look at that, I mean, again, another very significant problem that seems like one of those statistics that kind of flies by and doesn't really jolt you. But when you begin to think about the fact that all of these agencies, with the difficulties they're having and the budget constraints, I mean, can they drive 100 mile beyond their 100 mile radius? Right. Can they, you know, do this and that to provide a basic service of government that every citizen expects, wants, and wants the best possible? So, again, I think that paints the picture where some of these services, some of these things that government has been doing and not doing well, perhaps this is a time to take a look at them, rein them back in, and redirect monies to services that really are critical to the welfare of the state of Oklahoma.
A watchdog group is leveling a lawsuit against Attorney General Scott Pruitt over what it calls violations of the state's Open Records Act. While the lawsuit is coming from Wisconsin-based Center for Media and Democracy, the ACLU is taking part as well. Ryan, what's going on here?
Yeah, we are co-counsel with attorneys from Hall Estill here in Oklahoma representing the Center for Media and Democracy. Essentially, what you're looking at are records that have been requested in multiple records requests to the Attorney General's office, some of those dating back to over 2 years old now. And, you know, these are records that the Center for Media and Democracy, they have been wanting for a while. But now, not only is the Attorney General stonewalling this group, he's essentially stonewalling the United States Senate and the American people during his confirmation proceedings to become the head of the EPA. He told Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, among others, as they were considering his nomination in committee, if you want these records, simply go to my office and get them. Well, that's disingenuous. You know, if Senator Whitehouse, which he has now, gone to the Attorney General's office with an open records request of his own saying, I'd like these documents, there's really no evidence that the Attorney General's office has any intent on complying with this in a prompt and reasonable way. And that's what the Oklahoma law requires. Prompt and reasonable access to these documents. And anything, and we can argue, you know, sometimes the size of the request may mean that from a week to maybe a really big request could be a month or two. But 2 years on these requests, and this is, you know, similar to litigation that we are leading on behalf of plaintiffs against Governor Mary Fallon for requests that are over 2 years old. We sat in front of a Oklahoma County District Judge in that case last week. And, you know, the judge chided the governor's attorneys jokingly. So he said they were going to give him some paperwork. He said, well, I hope that I don't have to wait 2 years for it. And that's kind of where we're at right now. Prompt and reasonable means what it is. If the governor or the attorney general don't like that, they should go to the legislature and change the law.
Neva.
I do think that that the issue of prompt and reasonable certainly is an expectation people have. But I think what we have mixed in with this, unfortunately, in the midst of this confirmation process for General Pruitt, is the fact that you have the one side saying it's political theater. You have the other side saying it's an attempt to get documents that are long overdue. And I think it's a last-ditch effort in large measure. I mean, with the expectation, I think, still that General Pruitt will be confirmed by the United States Senate and will be the next EPA head. So, but I think from a public standpoint, I think this is one of those issues where people are a little bit fuzzy. They don't really totally understand all that's going on. The people that are in the trenches, the people that are, you know, very involved in these requests for records, certainly understand and have a high degree of concern, but I think the backdrop is that it's unfortunate that these issues weren't resolved before a confirmation hearing, but they weren't, and now we're seeing this infused into this last minute attempt to try to scuttle the vote on a successful vote on General Pruitt, and I just don't see that happening.
Well, and I don't even think of it as an attempt to scuttle the vote. I think it's an attempt to make sure that the United States Senate and the people of America and right here in Oklahoma, the people of Oklahoma have the transparency and accountability that is guaranteed to them and promised to them by law. No doubt the backdrop of the confirmation process for him to become the head of the EPA plays into the urgency to get these documents now. Because these documents can play a vital role, not only in holding the Oklahoma Attorney General's office accountable to the people of Oklahoma, which, I mean, these records belong to that office. Yeah. If General Pruitt gets confirmed and he's gone and there's somebody else there, those documents still belong to that office and are required to be turned over to the people of Oklahoma. But there is this urgency now because these documents may be relevant. We don't know if they are. We don't know what's in the documents, but they may be relevant to the Senate's decision as to whether or not to confirm him as head of the EPA. And ultimately, this is a case not about this one individual, but about all government officials to ensure that no government official, the Oklahoma Attorney General, the head of the EPA, or even the President of the United States, is above the law.
And that's what it seems like. It's not really the Attorney General Scott Pruitt could certainly say it's political theater. This is really this is his office that. Regardless, I mean, Brad Henry used to have some trouble getting.
Oh, absolutely,
getting it, so
and I think this issue is not going to go away. I mean, this is a process. It's now in the courts. I mean, regardless of whether Scott Pruitt goes to Washington D.C. or doesn't go to Washington D.C., this issue will ultimately get resolved one way or the other. And I think but with respect to Scott Pruitt and his next job, I do still foresee that the Senate will in fact confirm him, just as they did after similar battles with Jeff Sessions and Betsy DeVos. But I think at the end of the day, we'll see Scott Pruitt as the highest ranking member of the new administration from Oklahoma.
State Representative Dan Kirby announces his retirement again. The Tulsa Republican says he is leaving at effective March 1st after facing possible expulsion from the State House over allegations of sexual harassment. Representative Kirby originally resigned near the beginning of the year but changed his mind. Neva, did he just draw the inevitable, or was it a good idea to stick around?
Well, I think he may have read the tea leaves finally, and it was clear that while he still maintained A, his innocence, and B, that he could have forestalled the vote and survived. The bottom line was they had made it clear, I think, to Representative Kirby that he was not going to be in a very effective place if he tried to hang on. I mean, they had removed him from his chairmanship. They were making it clear that he would be removed from all committees. His bills would be reassigned. He would not get a legislative assistant. I mean, how effective can a representative be with all of that taking place? So I think it points to the fact that the committee and the House were very deliberate in saying we want to deal with this, we want to deal with it in a very thorough, fair process, but at the end of it, we want to get it taken care of so that we can move on with the business at hand in the legislative session, and I think that was wise, not to let this linger on, and I think, let's also take a look at it from the standpoint of having done this, he was able to also hold on to his pension. Had he gone some other direction, that might have been in question as well. So I think it's regrettable that these circumstances came to light. I certainly think that the committee did an excellent job in pushing this through. And I, once again, I think Speaker McCall made it clear that they were going to, that they were not just going to sweep something, under the rug. They were not just going to let it flounder. They were going to deal with it and move on.
I've seen many investigations by the House, by the Senate, against lawmakers. I don't think I've ever seen anyone actually recommend expulsion. I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, that's the first time that I'm aware of it.
Yeah. Randy Terrell and all these people that have never been.
I think that Representative Kirby did the right thing here, by stepping down and not forcing an ouster vote. I mean, if you just think of the dynamics of that, kind of the inside baseball in the legislature, he probably has friends that are would feel compelled to not vote to oust him, but then that would hurt them back in their districts, and so he would put these folks in a very difficult position. And so by doing this, I think that he can demonstrate that he is taking some responsibility for his actions, and that he can move on and maybe preserve some of these relationships with members of the Oklahoma House of Representatives. It would have put folks in a very difficult position, or at least some of them. I mean, I don't think some of them would have very easily voted to oust him.
But, and you had a situation where he said that, frankly, he couldn't in good conscience continue to fight against unfounded accusations. I think that's a stretch by any look at what was even put out after the committee gave their findings. I mean, it was pretty clear that the committee rejected his 3.5 hours behind closed doors, that his notion that his version of it certainly they felt was completely inappropriate, that it was regardless, impaired public confidence in the legislature. And I think that's the key. I mean,
yeah.
People want to have confidence in the folks that are up there doing the people's business, and this would have been a real roadblock to that had they not taken the direction that they went.
And it's good to get it over early in session.
Absolutely.
It's done. I think that, you know, moving forward, there are some things that the House and the Senate can look at in terms of if we're going to have to deal with stuff like this in the future, maybe we should have some standard rules and procedures.
Let's and I not think make we're up, seeing that already, yeah, as I understand
as
it. Many of those things are already in place and moving to be put in place.
And education as well. Charles McCall has said we're going to educate lawmakers in what is right and what is wrong in sexual harassment, which, you know.
And not only the lawmakers, but their staffs as well.
Right.
I mean, I think this is a kind of a wake-up call for a lot of folks that in this day and age, that is a very good demonstration of being sure that everyone knows what the rules are and play by them accordingly.
It's a government institution, but it's also a business where folks work there, and the people that go to work in that building need to know that they have as much protection there as if they went to work for a private industry.
Absolutely.
Governor Fallon announces new sales taxes are coming from Amazon and other online retailers. The online newspaper Oklahoma Watch estimates the sales tax could raise $300 million in the next year, and the state could even see money before the end of the fiscal year on June 30th. Ryan, your thoughts on this news?
I need to start ordering stuff. All,
I know. Yeah, quickly, let's get out our credit cards.
I think I'm probably one of the few Oklahomans that on their income tax, you know, you do the estimated deal for at the very end. To see how much you probably owe in sales tax. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I think that this is a good news for the state of Oklahoma. It's something that's long overdue. We're one of a handful of states that was, you know, continuing to lose out on sales tax dollars at the state and municipal level. I think it's going to put some of our retailers on a more even playing field with Amazon. I still think that, you know, the online marketplace will have an advantage for convenience.
Sure.
And so it's not like it's going to put Amazon out of business. It's not like it's going to rebuild downtowns. But at the same time, it's going to put some money back into budgets that desperately need it.
And most people don't realize, Neva, that this was a tax that was already on the books. It just was basically not enforced.
That's right. And I think what we're seeing is all of the states have been struggling with this. There are 10 states this winter that are beginning to get sales tax from the online Amazon and those types of services. And so, I mean, even in our numbers, I mean, as the governor said, I mean, there was the incorporated into our current numbers was the notion that we would get this deal and that we would start moving forward with Amazon collecting sales tax. And so Amazon, you know, early on was holding on to a 1992, I think it was, ruling that basically said if you didn't have a physical location presence, that you didn't have to collect. But even they see what's coming, I think, on the horizon, and that is what the governor even indicated and was advocating, as many governors are, that Congress needs to now look at this. And I think that's where it's trending, is that it's an issue that's impacting all 50 states and is something that is going to have to be looked at to level the playing field. And again, I think you're right, Ryan. It's not going to change the number of folks that go online for convenience or comparison shopping to use something like online shopping, but it will afford the cities and towns, particularly these, you know, municipalities that are struggling all across Oklahoma, to have at least some infusion back of sales tax money. And that is critical right now, because I think what we see is almost every community without exception is in a budget hole as well as the state, and this is something that we've got to be very cognizant of.
And under the Oklahoma law, these collections by Amazon are voluntary. It's part of an agreement struck by the state of Oklahoma. And so they had an option. They could either collect these dollars and then remit them back to the state, or they could begin to report to their consumers how much money they needed to remit to the state in income or in sales tax dollars whenever they're filing their taxes. And, you know, so the state, you know, to its credit, put together a very streamlined process and made it attractive for Amazon to actually begin to collecting this revenue and then remitting it to the state. I think ultimately we'll see more money this way than we would if it were simply a Amazon report to the consumer and then the consumer report to the state.
I agree completely. I think that was a great part of the negotiation that that the governor and the state did with Amazon is to be able to get that as part of the overall package.
Yeah, there was one owner who said the voluntary system just really doesn't work. And also, basically, if you kept it with the voluntary system, then you're basically making a bunch of criminals out of Oklahomans who go shop online and don't remit to the state tax commission.
Well, and if the figure of $300 million that state officials estimated we had lost on online shopping is anywhere near accurate, we know it's only growing year in and year out now toward the future. So this was something again that was very timely in the not only in the midst of this budget shortfall year, but just in the totality of looking at how we do business in Oklahoma and how we make sure that small business in Oklahoma can continue to survive in these communities, large and small, across our state.
And hopefully see small businesses actually grow online, because I think it was one of the things that was keeping local small businesses. If you've got a physical shop, you have to give the sales tax. So why even have that? Why have something online? So hopefully now we can actually have some of these small businesses maybe doing some competitive competing with larger businesses.
I think that's an excellent point.
Well, there's, you know, now if we eliminate the grocery tax, all the groceries that come in on Amazon, you know, that could be, so that could upset things. So we'll see. A lot of moving parts here, people.
And what do we do about the sales tax holiday?
Yeah. And then again.
Fantastic. And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.